Welcome to Get Amplified from the Amplified Group, the podcast for tech industry leaders and aspiring leaders focusing on transforming talented individuals into extraordinary teams. I say this every time, of course, we're virtual as usual. I'm at home in Bucks, Vicky's over in deepest, darkest Oxfordshire, not so far away. Shah's a little further away in the Netherlands. Shah, do you want to lead us in? Tell us what we're covering in today's episode, please.
I will indeed, Sam. Thank you. So today we're going to be talking about best practices when working remotely. And the person we have with us today is Martin Storey, who is the Director of Customer Success at Puppet. And Martin's got some fantastic experience in this area, particularly in the last, unfortunately, the last 9 to 10 months. So I'm really looking forward to hearing some of his experiences there.
Brilliant. And Shah, just to change it up a little bit, we're going to supplement this episode with a couple of snippets of wisdom from our previous guests, right?
Absolutely we are. So we've got a few pearls of wisdom that we've been really storing up and collecting. DPJ and Stuart Fenton in previous podcasts had some really great insights into this and how a leader can work with a team remotely. So we've saved them up for our listeners, and we're going to add it in to this topic as well. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Like a greatest hits compilation.
A little mashup for you, yes.
Brilliant. All mashup. Very modern. Very on trend. So, Martin, do you want to maybe start by giving us a little bit of a potted career history of where you've got up to so far and how you got to where you are today?
Absolutely, Sam. Well, first of all, I want to say thank you to all three of you for inviting me to do this. Really looking forward to this chat. It's been a bit of an interesting mix, actually. So I originally was a geologist before I went into IT. Back in the late 80s, did a degree in geology. Love everything about the earth, and was a hydrogeologist for a short period of time. But I've always been a techie. Always been a techie at heart, always played with tech. I remember my first VIC-20 my dad gave me when I was a young lad, and decided to make a bit of a switch while I could, while I was young, when I was about 20, 21, 22, and went into working for a couple of companies, working in IT. I've been very much focused on the infrastructure side of the world. Those of you who are as old as me on the call will remember Novell Networks, will remember Windows NT351, we'll remember.
I had a Novell qualification way, way, way back in the day. Can't remember what it was, but or what it was for. But
yeah, great OS, amazing file system. But you know, the world of Microsoft took them over, and away you went, basically. So, always been an infrastructure kind of guy, and then went into pre-sales around 95, 96 for a small reseller. In the Microsoft arena and the Citrix arena. And I've always been a bit of a salesperson at heart. I think I'm a chip off the old block of my dad. I've lived in pubs all my life. My dad's a bit of a, you know, one of these guys. He's a bit of a chinwag with people. And I kind of been that much kind of outgoing person. I think it's really important as a pre-sales person, but I've always been a techie, so I love to evangelize. And, you know, I went through, got loads of qualifications in, I was an MCSC, a Cisco CCIE, and went through all that process and joined a couple of resellers, spent a bit of time in the Unix arena, Sun Solaris and HPUX, worked for a large reseller called Morse. So I was in the partner world for quite a long time. And then finally sort of branched into Vendorland in 2005 and joined VMware.
Yes, I've heard of them.
Absolutely. Just a small company now. I mean, it was amazing. Amazing when I started, there was in Frimley, there was something like, I don't know, 10, 15 people in there. I was one of three SEs. I covered probably the best patch in the UK, which was central London, city of London. It was mad, literally jumping on a tube every day, yeah. 5 meetings a day. It was really cool.
And this was ESX era VMware, right? The early vSphere stuff.
Absolutely, ESX version 2. Yeah,
it was just magic, and
yeah,
why wouldn't you have gone down that route? It was fantastic.
I know. I remember going into early meetings, Sam, and showing vMotion for the first time, and
yeah.
We're just like,
what sorcery is this?
Everybody says that, and it was so cool. I used to wear. Yeah. That badge and that, you know, the VMware badge of pride and people.
Yeah.
It was great days. Lovely company, still is an amazing company. And look at the size of it now.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, we've all, all four of us have been through VMware in some way, shape or form, and I think we've got a lot of love for the company.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So yeah, 10 years at VMware. I moved over to management after two, three years of SE World, ran the channel pre-sales team for UK, then ran the tier one pre-sales team for the UK, which also covered global accounts as well. So more solution architecture type pre-sale as you're bringing up the stack.
And as the product set started to broaden out.
Exactly, into cloud, private cloud solutions with obviously, as was in the early days, VCAC, which is obviously now VROCs, VROM, VRO. So, and obviously the EUC technologies as well. You know, as an SE, you have to be a generalist, right? So, really great times, love the company, but it's time for a change. Decided to go into the cybersecurity industry and joined Intel Security, which is the part of Intel that bought McAfee. So spent 2 years understanding and spending some time in cyber, which is really cool, actually. You know, all the bad actors out there and understanding it's so different to VMware, right? And obviously, they've now branched into security quite heavily with Carbon Black, right? So, yeah. And then after that, decided to get back into my roots of infrastructure. Started to get back into my roots of that world. So I joined Puppet. I joined Puppet to run the EMEA pre-sales and PS team. So running both sides of the coin, right? From selling not selling it and chucking it over the fence. I was responsible for both. Yeah. And it's great to cover an EMEA role, right? So as you're broadening yourself in terms of, you know, working with different cultures and things like that. So yeah, really good. Learned a lot about Puppet when I was at VMware. You know, it was talked about a bit.
Yeah.
And now working for the company, it's infrastructure as code, right? It's the infrastructure person of the old being more like a developer, acting more like a developer. And obviously it's automation. So yeah, that's a real, real quick potted history of my time.
Brilliant.
Puppet.
Yeah. Thank you. So Vicky, do you want to jump in and tell us a little bit about today's topic and why we've chosen it, why we're covering it?
Yes, thanks, Sam. Why we have Martin on the podcast today is because very early on in my days at VMware, I had the pleasure of working with Martin, and he is such a collaborative team player. When I think of Martin, I just think about someone who just does the right thing. Always does the right thing. And so when the pandemic first hit, seeing on LinkedIn, way before anybody else was doing it, Martin had highlighted that he was doing a pub quiz with his team. And it really took off after that, but Martin was really out the doors early with it. And so when this topic came up about best practices, because the world of remote working now has definitely changed. And even with the vaccine, I don't think we're ever going to go back to office work as we were before. We've been working with some companies through the last few months, and it's become really apparent that remote working has different challenges and brings different challenges, and silos form much more easily. And it's very, very important to keep organizations tight and aligned. And the communication is such a critical part of that. And I know Martin's got some great best practices that he's going to share from Puppet. So really looking forward to hearing more about what he's doing.
Brilliant. I'm looking forward to hearing all about that as well. So Martin, do you want to start? Maybe give us a bit more background on Puppet.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, to talk about the culture of Puppet, it's such a great company. It's born out of Portland over in Oregon, was originally set up by and founded by a guy called Luke Canis over in the Portland area. Luke is an old school sysadmin. He doesn't want to be installing stuff manually and configuring things. It's because there's got to be a better way to do this. He went around, worked as a contractor all around all sorts of companies, set me up these networks, set me up these systems. So he decided to automate a lot of the stuff that he did because he thought it was just a waste of his time. He started the company up in 2005. He created the Puppet language, and effectively a lot of companies refer to us as a DevOps company at the end of the day. There's definitely some truth in that, but there's also a truth with regards to, you know, maintaining and automating operations, because that's the challenge, is getting systems up and running quickly and that are consistent, that don't change, because things change quite a lot in data centers. You know, it's hard to keep track of stuff, not only because you've got to keep things up to date, patch them, keep them consistent, you know, keep away those bad actors, all that stuff I learned at Intel Security. It's a hard job. And when you're dealing with thousands and thousands of systems, all differently configured, with all their application stacks all on top of each other, it's a hard job. And it's a soul destroying job for quite a few admins out there. So if we can help them take away that pain and take away those soul crushing jobs, we call it, and being into more innovative and bringing in automation. And automation's key in today, especially in the days of COVID, when everything's remote and you've got to try and make things maintainable and inconsistent. Puppet really helps in that world. So effectively, we wrote the first view to creating infrastructure as code. Everything that you install can configure on something that is maintainable in some way can be turned into code. Every operating system, every switch that you turn on, every command that you do, you can find facts about that system and you can configure them in the way that you want to keep them the way that that company wants them, in the right way. So yeah, at a very high level, we're an automation company. We've branched out into lots of other areas. Our main key product is Puppet Enterprise. We're born out of an open source company, Puppet Open Source. It's in version 7 now. Puppet Enterprise is an evolution of that, which the first version that came out in 2011. So first commercial product in 2011. And we're now up to, well, effectively version 7 in the enterprise, but we call it 2019. It's a slightly different naming convention. But lots of the products have spawned off from that enable Puppet Enterprise to be taken on board in a particular way. A recent launch we did was Puppet Comply, because compliance is key for security. And Puppet makes things the way that they should be, and we help to keep them compliant. So, yeah, that's kind of a really high-level view of what it is.
All that makes sense. It's an interesting company. It seems like the you joined at the right sort of time, and the organization came to the fore at the right sort of time, as people were starting to move in the direction of merging, bringing ops and devs closer together, and. The security angle is really interesting. I think that was our major interest in playing with Puppet from a Softcat standpoint, was, you're right, enabling people to keep it simple, write once, deploy many kind of stuff, make sure it's all up to the same standards every time. That's the key, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, and just to close out on the dev side, systems are changing so rapidly. Developers want to make change to systems to build in new features. And that's in direct conflict with ops. Ops don't want to do that. Ops want to keep things static. And developers don't. So they need to work together in order to make it real and make them sustainable. So yeah, DevOps, absolutely.
Yeah, now that software development, I suppose even more so at the minute, the whole digitization or digitalization stuff has accelerated over the last 9 months or so. That stuff is probably more important today than it was 9 months ago.
Absolutely. The opportunity that the situation is, definitely.
So as I suppose that leads us into the dreaded COVID pandemic conversation, what were your priorities with your remote team when this stuff first
It's interesting. Yeah, just great question. And when Vicky sort of teed this point up, and she said that she saw the thing on LinkedIn. You know what? I remember my last tube journey down into London, because I was in London every day of the week. I love going in. Our London office is beautiful. It's gorgeous down in Aldgate. And it's great to be with everybody and be close to everybody. And you've got the banter in the office, especially the sales. It's important for me to listen in to what the salespeople are talking about and listen to what my team are talking about and the PS team. And when that's all suddenly gone, when you're like, you know, no more jumping on the tube and getting into London, whether that's a good thing or not, jumping on sort of sardines on the bloody tube, you know, I woke up the day that we gave the announcement globally that we'd shut all offices, and that's our offices in Portland, London, Belfast, Singapore, Sydney. And I woke up and I thought, Jesus, got to do something about this. Got to keep the team together. We've got a solid team. We've got to keep communicating. We've got to keep innovating. Otherwise, we're going to be stuck in these chicken coops for God knows how long. And obviously, that was way back in March, right? So, and we're still stuck in our bloody chicken coops. But, you know, I had to think outside the box. So first day, I was thinking, right, okay, let me have a little think about this. We've got to keep catching up. We have our Monday meetings as a team. And that's fine to do that on a Zoom. But we need to have like the social side of it, because it's one side of the coin, sort of professional working and getting the job done. The other side of the coin is sort of being together as a team and being trustful with everybody, getting to know everybody, having a good laugh, you know. So I decided to work with one of my SEs to do this pub quiz. So we still do it. We don't do it every single Friday now. We sort of overdid it, to be honest, in the first few months, because kind of, all right, there's only so many.
It was a bit of a novelty, wasn't it? You know, it was good fun. And then,
but we still meet for a beer on a Friday. Not everybody turns up. Most people do. We have a chin wag. Every now and then we do have the odd quiz. And you know, quite a few other teams around the globe have actually using the same platform we hire, just like a SaaS platform we use for quizzes. It's really cool. And we just have a laugh and keep together. So that was my first initial thing. But there's lots of other things that you've got to start thinking about in terms of in this pandemic. How can we still maintain innovation and make people think they've got purpose in the job, let alone the Friday pub quiz, right? And doing things differently that we can have impact with. So one of the things I did was we had to start driving a hands-on lab workshop program that all the SEs could get involved in creating. So we generated and created something really quickly with the marketing team. Now we've got a global rolled out workshop, hands-on lab workshop plus webinar program, which is now globally done in the US and in EMEA. We kicked it off in EMEA. And marketing love it because they want to reach out to more customers and it gets the SEs more. So again, other innovation you've got to think about to keep the team really engaged, and this is outside from the day job, from being a pre-sale systems engineer. The other thing we had to do is rapidly remove our PS team from doing on-site work to complete off-site work, and that was a challenge in itself, communicating that to customers. However, it worked really well in the end. You know, we can do everything remotely, connect into systems.
Of course you can.
So isn't it funny how companies have adapted?
We just adapt and get on with it, really.
Exactly. That's human nature, right? You've just got to have a positive attitude and crack on with it, really. So
No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So how important is building alignment?
Alignment is so important, especially even more so with the COVID environment, because again, people got to be fully aligned to where the company's going. I mean, the company's gone through a lot of change. We had leadership brought in, a leadership change from CEO downwards. So Yvonne Vassanir is CEO. I know Yvonne from my days at VMware. She worked with Carl Eschenbach quite closely in the early days of VMware. And she joined a couple of years ago now. Really impactful, and she made some changes through the organization. My boss, Beth Shea, absolutely love working with her. She is so important for me in my career, but also for the whole of the organization. One of the things that she's instilled in the whole of the organization is to work as a global team. We are that size company that we can do that. So for example, the best practices that I may do in the international region. So obviously my role changed from EMEA to run EMEA and APAC. And there's some great best practices happening over in APAC. I bring that to her. And there's some great best practices happening over in the US. So alignment at a leadership level is absolutely key. So Beth fosters that. And the trust in the team, in the senior leadership team for customer success, is really solid. We really, you know, get on so well. I can't wait till I can jump on a plane and meet them again and go and have a beer with them and have a laugh, you know. So that side of the coin. The other side of the coin is ensuring that the alignment down from the leadership level is globally structured and everybody's on the same page, so that we're all in it together, we're all pulling together to drive it. So I spoke to Vicky about OKRs, objective key results. You know, a lot of people talk about KPIs. This is one thing that I remember from many days.
Yeah,
so
wanted to drill into this. It's quite interesting because everybody does KPIs, right? That's just standard across business. So this is something slightly different.
It is something slightly different. And OKRs for us at Puppet, we maintain and change our OKRs on a half by half basis. We've just recently defined them a couple of months ago for the second half. It was so key for everybody to get agreement as to what we're going to focus on. And the difference between OKRs and KPIs is quite significant in my view. And everyone's got a different view on this, so this is my view on it. I think OKRs are much more digestible and simplistic to understand, rather than having a ream of KPIs, could be 20 KPIs. I remember seeing a list of 20 KPIs when we used to do KPIs at Puppet and do KPIs at VMware, actually. OKRs, you summarize it in a different way. And the word key results, it's in the name, right? And monitoring and managing those results. So what we have at Puppet is we have three main objectives. I won't go into detail on them, but effectively it's around hitting the number, product, and performance in teams. That's effectively it from three levels. There's devils in the detail in each of those three, but the focus is around those three key metrics. There's a key exec sponsor against each objective. There's specific KRs underneath them, so key results. So they're the things that you monitor the metrics around. And what you're trying to do is move the needle in the quarter.
Those things then roll up into the overall result that you're aiming at, right?
Correct. Yeah. So effectively, there's a dashboard that we have on Confluence that everybody's got visibility of, that they can see how we're doing in each one of these KRs.
I like that. It makes sense because sometimes you look at KPIs and you wonder if they really roll up to the overall business objective, or you wonder if there's something that's put in just so your manager's got something to talk about or something to bonus you on or not bonus you on, as the case may be.
I'm so pleased that we're talking about this subject because I just think it's so important. I was only having a conversation with a client this morning just on this topic, and one of the differences I see between KPIs and OKRs, and Martin, what you've just described, I completely agree with. I think everything you've just said makes complete sense. But KPIs also for me are, it's like business as usual. These are the things that we're generally tracking. Whereas OKRs to me are about, these are the things that we are going to bring in that's going to make a change and that's going to move the needle.
Yeah.
So I see that as a difference. And actually when I came across OKRs at VMware, but not because somebody else had introduced them. It was in my last role, I got asked to build out a much larger organization than I was used to leading. And I had managers of managers, and I really wanted to get make sure that we were all on the same page and to be able to know how people were feeling further down the track. And the other driver here was actually that we used to do a weekly report, and it used to be a weekly report in Word that actually came from the Citrix Times, because the person that set up VMware in Mia came from Citrix, and we used to do this weekly report, and it used to take ages to do, and then it would be filed away and never looked at again. And that to me just felt like, yeah.
I remember them well, filling them out. I remember them asking my team to do them when I was at VMware, and I'd have a whole list of every week.
Yeah.
And it just gets put into a file share somewhere, and no one really acts on it. Yeah.
No, exactly. So it was, how do we, there must be a new way of doing that. And we came across a system called Week Done. And it was Week Done actually that introduced the concept of OKRs to me and to the team. And so that would be cascading the goals, but also their weekly report or their week done, it would just be a tiny snippet, but then they would tag what they'd done to the key objectives.
Right.
And so you could see, you'd got that alignment. People knew what they were being expected to do, and you could also track progress against it as well. So week done was a really cool system. I think it's really, really taken off. So that this was like 3 or 4 years ago now. So it was quite a while ago.
That's really cool. Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to add to that point about, you know, people are tracking their activities against, you know, specific key results. And that this is back to your point, Sam, about everybody's got awareness about, you know, from exec down to senior leadership, down to the field, because then it was down to me and the rest of the leadership team to ensure the organization understood what the OKRs are. And my discussion with my team is, if you are doing anything that's aligned to an OKR, don't even talk to me about it. Just crack on with it.
If it does, it enables people. Well, it gives you that alignment that we talked about earlier, and it also massively empowers people, because if they can defend what they do, isn't quite the right phrase, but maybe justify what they do in the context of aiming for, striving for those OKRs, then...
Yeah,
that can only be a good thing. And you know, they might get it wrong, and they might have made a judgment that this will help, and maybe they just need nudging in the right direction. But at least you know they're doing it with the best intentions.
Correct.
And that, you know, that's quite important, actually.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, there's another point I wanted to make as well about that, is the fact that if you're very, very clear on what those OKRs are, it gives you permission in a way to say no to the other stuff that's being thrown at you. You know, it's just not on the list of priorities that we have agreed. So therefore I've got permission to say no. And you don't have to go to your manager then to say, can I do this or can't I? It's just, no, it's not on my priority. So I think that's what I use them in my team for, is to give them permission, empower them. We've agreed these are your performance indicators. So that's what you should be doing.
Yeah. 100%, spot on. Couldn't put it better myself, Sharon. That's effectively it. You know, it's about empowering people and just focus and moving that needle, because the world is moving so quickly, and we'll change them again if need be.
Sure. Have you needed to change them more regularly? You know, you mentioned a sort of a 6 month check-in. With the world changing more quickly and everything being in something of a state of flux, have you needed to go back and review them at 3 month increments instead of 6 month increments? Or I mean, I guess ideally you wouldn't, because you know you want people to have a chunk of time to go after a big goal,
rather
than keep flipping your direction.
Not yet. I think this current round of OKRs that we've done is the best way that we've approached it, actually.
Yeah.
Because we did have a go in the previous one, and you learn as you go on as an organisation how you find
refine it each time. Yeah,
this way, this is from Yvonne and Beth. Beth, my boss, has been leading a leadership program, and basically we've taken about a month to 2 months to go through it as a group, as a whole leadership team, to disseminate it and agree with, because the words are important, the words that you use and how you disseminate them down to your field. And we had to fine tune some of the words so that we're in agreement on it.
That makes sense.
And then you go to the field with it, and everybody in the field were resoundingly kind of, this is brilliant, this is spot on. Everybody's talking OKRs in my conversations with them. It's become part of the DNA. So we've definitely done something right. And obviously we'll improve the next set of OKRs that we change. We may change them in FY21, FY22 for us, actually.
Do you find it's an evolution rather than a wholesale change?
Yeah.
Like you nudge it forward with each iteration.
Correct. You've got to take it, you know, just like what you learn as a manager. You can't.
I guess there'll be times when there's a step change in the business, but
yeah,
that would be the exception.
One of the other things that you said yesterday, in order for you to give your feedback into the leadership team, you'd also done an awful lot of listening to the people in the field as well. So you were representing them back in. So I think that also really ties into the fact that they were bought into them to start with. And that, Sam, really relates back to what we talked about with Pippa, doesn't it, at Tesco, of making sure that everybody was on board, because everybody felt like they'd been heard. They might not have been directly in the conversation.
Yeah.
Does that,
yeah.
Does that make sense, yeah. Martin?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's that building a consensus because people have had the opportunity to get their point of view across, even if the business doesn't go in their direction. The fact that they've been consulted means that they get on board, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. They were consulted. There was debate around each of the OKRs between the team, but they were decided on by the exec team and the leadership team, senior leadership team. We weren't going to change them drastically in any way, shape or form, because we were consulted with them along the way. There's people who I speak to, they're my right-hand men and women in the organization, saying, look, we're working on these OKRs, right? I want to give you some visibility of these things. And then I can feed that back in to every, which is what Vicky's on about, is I was consulting them along the way. And then by the time it came for, you can't consult with everybody, right? You know, there's only so many people you can consult with. By the time we came to launch, it was painless. It really was. It just was smooth. Yeah.
That's brilliant. Have you got any sort of specific concrete examples of how this has had an impact on the organization?
Yeah, I think one of the big ones we've had recently is in the product OKR. We had a sticky situation with a customer recently, and this is a really good example of everybody coming together as a team because they fully understand the OKRs and they fully understand the purpose of why they're there. And you know, the customer is, we're very, like every organization says this, customer centric, right? You know, of course it's so true, but this particular scenario, we had a challenge with a customer, very sticky situation. And in this scenario, we had to rally around as a team and get the right people on this particular challenge that we're dealing with the customer, which had an effect potentially on a deal that we were aiming to close in November. And all came together as a team. I built a team. It was a combination of people in the US, people in EMEA, and people in APAC. The customer was in APAC. It's one of my customers. And it was amazing how everyone rallied together and the communication lines to the customer could see we really cared and bothered about what they wanted. And within 2 to 3 weeks, we had a really sticky situation, all sorted out. And I swear, if we were all in a pub, we'd have been buying everybody shots and having a good old laugh with each other, because it was the euphoria of seeing the customer go from, you know, quite tense over to being, we love what you're doing. It was just so, so great. And it was a combination of working with product, engineering, customer success, really great teamwork is an example of that.
Brilliant, thank you. And this is globally across the whole organization, right? This isn't just a Martin Story initiative.
No, this is a global initiative. This comes back to the point I was saying earlier about Beth. Beth is so key to ensure that we work together as a group across the board. And we're at that, as I say, we're at that size where we can do that. And that's one of the beauties why I love working a puppet, is it's just got that ability for you to pick up the phone, no matter what level you are, get together and pull together as a team. And the same would happen. I mean, I've been helping some stuff in the US, customers in the US, because there's people in my team that are perfect to help out people in the US. It's not about theatres. It's not about EMEA, APAC and the US. Not about that at all. It's about us all pulling together and helping each other out. And it works really, really well.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Well, you know,
it's the power of team, isn't it?
Well, it is. It is the power of team. And, you know, that's what you want. You want everybody pulling in the same direction. You know, that was the great thing about Softcat for me, was we had a lot of that. You know, it wasn't a big organization, even when it became a big organization, if you know what I mean. You could still rock up at the chief exec's desk and say, yeah, I think we should be going this way, or I think we should be going that way, or have you thought about this, that or the other? And that stuff was massively encouraged, and it feels like you've got a similar sort of thing.
Absolutely.
And that's really important, because
yeah,
the people at the top, you know, we were blessed with Martin and Colin, you know, they obviously really knew what they were doing, but they don't always see absolutely everything on the ground all the time. So you absolutely rely on that feedback and that open conversation, don't you?
Totally. Open honesty and transparency is one of our major taglines in Puppet, and it's fostered all the way through.
Yeah.
And it's leadership to instill that and ensure that that the team are aware of that, and it is
open-based.
And we've got really, really strong, we have very low attrition in the company because I believe in that open, honest and transparency.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So previously on Get Amplified, we've talked a lot about the well-being of employees and in particular mental health. Now, you know, it seems to me like you've done a lot of work on that within your group. Do you feel a responsibility for the mental health of your team? And is that something that's endemic within Puppet? Or again, is that just a Martin Story initiative?
No, it's a global initiative. We have with the COVID committee at Puppet is very strong and made up of many people around the globe. And there's a dedicated Slack channel that we have around COVID. But specifically around, you know, the fact that we're all remote and we're in this new world now, and mental health is something that we all need to be conscious about. I personally went on a mental health course through Puppet just before lockdown, actually. It's really interesting stuff. 3-day course, very useful. So I'm mental health. I've got the badge now and all that kind of stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, it's important that we keep in contact with everybody, because you just don't know what the lives are that people have got the other side of the planet. I've got people in Sydney and Singapore, and I trust in my leadership team in Sydney to reach out to many people as possible. It's important, even as my level, to do skip level one-to-ones, right? So that I sort of reach out regularly.
Skip level?
Yeah,
so skip a level.
Yeah, one level down. Because there's some reports that don't report to me, but report through a manager. And just sort of check in. But it's also important to also reach out to people who are not in your own organisation, I think, as well, and just have a chinwag with people just generally. You know, so I often reach out to some salespeople. We've got a few young salespeople, right? I reach out to people in engineering and support and other areas of the organization, not specifically, but I've got relationships with, and just check in with them, you know, the odd Slack message and say, hey mate, do you want to have a chat? We also do this thing in Puppet called Donut. It's all done by, it's have a coffee and a donut, right? So basically it's automated through our Slack system, and you just get paired up with someone randomly. And I was having a chat with this engineer in Portland the other day. What a great guy. He's into all the stuff. He's into gaming. I love my gaming. Probably see behind me.
I can see the steering wheel behind you. Yeah.
Yeah. I enjoy that sort of stuff, because, you know, when you're in these times and you're all sort of locked in your house, you've got to have some other outlets. So
yeah,
I had this conversation with this guy, and, you know, it's really nice just to sort of meet just new people, but it's important to keep in contact regularly. That is what it's all about.
And I'm trying to break this down within Twilio now into more granular bits, so we can start, you know, giving employees some light at the end of the tunnel, because I think people are really, really struggling, and it is affecting their mental health, regardless of where they started. You know, if you're already fragile from a mental health perspective, this could be the thing that is knocking people over the edge, and it's horrifying to think about.
Yeah, I had a conversation this morning with an organization that I'm working with. And they said just that. It's like the novelty is worn off now. We need to find a way to come together. If we can't, how do we make this work now? We've got to face that. We've got to think about doing things differently. And this is an awesome team. They're so strong, but they're really feeling the strains of it. So goodness knows how organisations are feeling that aren't in a good place.
But we've got people we hired in March who've never, never met anybody from Twilio.
Yeah.
We're actually buddying them up. We just thought about this.
Yeah.
Buddy them up with people who are local to them and have some
sympathy
what they do. So, you know, in today's environment, at least they can work, they can meet socially, put a face to a name, and get some connection. And yeah, that's, by the way, just segueing a little bit into the, we'll all never go back to the office and we'll all be remote working. I don't think we will. And I think people need that kind of grounding in the culture that only a physical environment can give them. That doesn't mean they have to be in the office every day. I've never been a fan of presenteeism, but I am a fan of building culture. And I think it's exponentially harder if people haven't experienced the physical kind of cultural aspects of coming together in an office. And that's it's controversial, but that's certainly...
I'd absolutely agree. You know, it might mean that instead of being in the office 4 days a week, you're only in the office 2 days 1 week and 3 days the next or something, but being there and getting that physical connection. It's also about those accidental conversations that you have that you just don't get in a point-to-point or even a team-based video chat. It doesn't work like that, I don't think.
I think also you have to consider that everybody is different. Like we know, you know, from the work that we do, that everybody has a different approach, and some people are really struggling right now being isolated. Other people might be fine with working at home all the time, but you have to figure that out in your team. You know, I have friends, one of the guy, he works in support, and he said, I never want to go back to the office ever. I'm quite happy being at home, doing my own thing. And yet other friends of mine are saying, I'm going crazy here, I can't stand it. And so I love the buddying up thing. I've heard that before, actually. It's a really good idea just to find out who lives fairly local to you and just have a physical get together. The other thing that I'm seeing at the moment as well, which I think is a bad trend, is that it's kind of like we're going into this new normal where it's just Zoom calls back to back. There are no spaces in between your meetings. Everything's back to back. And we've stopped doing the fun bit. So instead of picking up the phone and saying, how are you okay with all of this? Oh, let's have a pub quiz on a Friday together and doing all the things that they were doing in COVID. That seems to be stopping, and it's just work, work, work. I don't know whether you're seeing that as well, DPJ, or you feel that.
It's such an interesting point. So yes, I am. And I think particularly in larger meetings, but I think what I've managed to get into the habit of doing is at some point in the meeting, ideally at the beginning, is going, how are you doing? And inevitably they go, oh, yeah, I'm okay. Sometimes they tell me straight away, which is great. But then you ask the second question, is like, how are you really doing? You know, how's it really? I really want to know, not just
some, I care.
Yeah, superfluous kind of question at the beginning. And I think having those conversations regularly makes it, just softens it for people, because they want a bit of empathy. They also, I mean, when I'm running team calls of my leadership team, I think me showing vulnerability around this as well, that I'm struggling with it, I think is powerful too, because it's absolutely more, it's weirdly acceptable if people above you have the same problem. It's also hierarchy, but just showing vulnerability, showing that you care, showing you genuinely want to know how people are getting on, and then also championing them back around some of the things we maybe can do to collectively make their lives easier. And I'm right in the middle of that. And my next call, in fact, is, you know, with HQ around how we can, I guess, bridge between today and fully opening an office with smaller kind of gives along the way that, as I say, you know, make people more hopeful that there's a brighter path to the future.
Let's hope so.
We did a recording earlier in the week, DPJ, with Stuart Fenton.
Yeah.
The reason we got in touch with him is because he'd done a hashtag no guilt inside his organisation, which was, it's okay to go for a walk. Don't feel bad about it if you've missed this call. You need to do that. And I think probably what you were just talking about, and I love the idea of buddying up and, you know, going for a socially distanced walk and being able to do that and making time for it in the daytime, in the winter, is going to be more critical, isn't it?
We as an organisation going through the COVID crisis recognised that we needed to do things differently. And our pulse survey was, interestingly, we have this shared team site where everyone can say anything to everybody. And at first, you know, you get all sorts of kind of, here's a picture of my dog and we all did it, and here's me working at home. And then then it sort of dies down and becomes, you know, like almost very little information. What we found is if you ask questions, you learn a lot through that process. And so in a somewhat active fashion, we do this thing where we ask people in our organization, what, you know, what are the challenges? We learned through COVID that people were working harder, more intensely,
more hours
than they were when you considered the commute and coming to the office and that kind of stuff. Even though on the commute, we're all doing our emails on the train and all that kind of stuff. You know, I think that we found people working and they were intense. And Teams, which and Zoom that we're on today, you know, these are brilliant tools, but the problem is they're very easy. And so, you know, as the moment a thought occurs to me, I can then contact Sam and tell him my thought. And there was this famous book by Bill Gates, Business at the Speed of Thought. But it was all about this instantaneous feedback loops and all this. And in reality is, you know, Bill Gates goes into a room for 6 hours a day to read books. I mean, he's not being interrupted every 23 seconds by an employee with a question. And what happens is there's this culture of suddenly, I can see so-and-so's online, or maybe I haven't even checked, but I'm just going to send them an instant message. And we really said to people that you shouldn't feel guilty about being away from your desk. And we had these things where, you know, people were saying, God, I'm really sorry I missed your instant message. I was getting a cup of tea. Well, God, don't feel guilty about getting a cup of tea or walking the dog or taking an hour's lunch break. Or as a lot of people who are homeschooling, you know, in this and that time, we're struggling. No. So we created a hashtag.
Yeah.
It was our second. The first hashtag we created was called Looking for Sunshine. When COVID hit, we said, right, we're going to go and find the good news and the good clients and the good opportunities. We called it Looking for Sunshine. Really helped us, and we continued to grow. Then we realized this intensity, the feedback, we created this no guilt. No. If you're not on Teams, that's okay. If you miss a call, that's absolutely fine. If you're going to be out walking the dog or doing some homeschool, it's fine. If you can't work from 9 until 5 because of homeschooling and you can only do, you know, 11 and until 6, or maybe you can only do 11 till 5, it's okay. In these unusual times, we will have to adapt ourselves and you should not feel guilty. So we created this no guilt thing. And it was enormously powerful. And then, you know, we layered that on with the third one, which was me time. And we make Wednesday afternoons, every Wednesday afternoon.
It's Stuart time.
No, they all have to listen to me.
Every not have a time.
They have to look at a picture of me.
salute their glorious leader.
A little shrine in their home. No, so we said to people, you know, let's not have any internal meetings on a Wednesday afternoon. And let's have, no, you can't buzz people on Teams on a Wednesday afternoon. It is now me time. And it's for you to focus on the things you need to get done for your job or clients or something. But there's no, you know, rat-a-tat-tat of the Teams pinging around. And that was really important to us. And, you know, that's been successful, not quite as successful as the no guilt thing, but it's been successful. You know, I'm one of the people who struggles with that in so far as, you know, I'm always wired in, but a lot of the people have said, I need my me time. And they actually mark it in their calendars and their teams out of office.
Great best practice.
But they'll talk to their clients in that period of time. They're able to, but it stops that kind of incessant.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to use the term Twitter in the truest sense of that, you know, that you get. And I think that, you know, when they said, look, you know, there's a view that there's the death of email coming. That's, you know, a lot of people abuse email for poxy little messages that could go over an instant messenger. But now instant messenger has become this thing where people don't write stuff down. So we've been big proponents of create a to-do list and sort it by the person that you want to talk to. So as I think, I just need to talk to Sam about this, I don't instantly get on Teams and talk about it. I write a list. Now people can use their book. I use Microsoft To Do. Other people can use Apple Reminders. I really don't care. But what they do is they organize their thoughts. So when they do call Sam, I need to talk to you about these 5 things. When are you available for us to have a meaningful moment and discuss these, you know, these 5 things? And that has been really important to us.
So the instant message becomes the vehicle for setting up the conversation rather than I need these things answered now.
Yeah, and you know, and there's always going to be an element of chatter, but what you're trying to do is dial it down.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes sense. And do you think this will carry on, you know, post-pandemic, when the world gets better? You know, what will be the balance between actually getting in together, getting in an office and working from home?
Yeah.
Will we go back to where we were before or not?
I don't think it's going, I think maybe in a few years, who knows, crystal ball, I hope so, to be honest, because I'd love the world as it was before, you know, and we're trying to make the most of it as it is at the moment. But,
yeah,
you know, I think, you know, we've opened up our offices over in the other side of the world, because they've managed to manage coronavirus a lot better than we have. But I don't know when ours are going to open, but I think we'll bring back some social side in some way.
Yeah.
But there's going to be an element of this trying to keep it together on Zoom gloom. I don't purport to the Zoom gloom thing, to be honest. It's just is what it is. Just crack on.
Yeah.
Be innovative and keep in contact and look after each other. That is the main thing, because mental health is there. We all
yeah.
see.
Yeah, it's really important.
But we'll get back to it.
Yeah, let's hope so. So while we're still in COVID mode, you best give us your three key takeaways on supporting a remote team.
Yeah, three key takeaways. I've peppered it through the conversation. But number one, ensure that you're regularly reaching out to your own team and also people outside your team. Think about, that's number one, regular reach out. Whichever methods you use. Number two, think about innovation, because people who innovate are people who really feel that they're providing worth to themselves and the company. The place is moving so quickly. There's so much opportunity to think outside the box. So give people the room to innovate freely within the OKRs, as to what was said before, and provide something that makes that move the needle. That's kind of number two. And number three, I think I could do 4, 5, 6, but I'm trying to think which is the best one to leave with the third. Take some time out for yourself away from all the meetings, and don't take life too seriously when it comes to work, because you're remote and you're thinking, oh, my boss doesn't know what I'm doing because I'm remote. I'm not providing the value, blah, blah, blah. You are, if you're doing all the previous two things we talked about, but take some time out. Ensure you don't burn yourself out. I mean, one of my girls is at university. She's doing remote. I see her more. I have lunch with her now. I never had lunch with her before. I've got a dog I can play with. Take that time out and be a bit human. Move away from the screen for your mental health. And that's kind of the third one.
That makes a lot of sense. A bit of self-care.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. Because then, you know, if you take care of yourself, you can be a much better support for your team and those around you. That makes sense. Right. Talking of maybe trying to be a hero, Shah. It's over to you. It's hero time.
Yeah, it's hero time. I just wanted to comment actually very quickly on what Martin said there. I was talking to one of our advisors today on email, Odette Newham, and he's the enterprise cloud architect for an organization, and he said that he's worked it out that on average he spends between 4 and 5 hours a day on Zoom for the last 6 months. So that's such great advice you just gave there, Martin. Take some time out for your mental health, but also for the fact that you're going to be a better team player if you feel better yourself, right? So it's such great advice. So you're a little bit of my hero today. So hero time, here we go. So hero time is something that we have always at the end of our podcast, a little bit of fun just to get into your psyche, find out maybe who's your hero or somebody that you admire. It could be now, it could be in the past. But also it's just because we've based it on the brand of the Amplified Group. We call him Hero. He wears a cape, and it's about making our clients the hero. So we always add this little section in. So with that, over to you.
Wow. I didn't even think about this one. I did see it on the pre-stuff, but I didn't really think too much about this. There's so many bloody people.
That's probably a better thing, I think.
Yeah, there's so many people who I admire in the world and I get inspiration from. both historically and obviously in today's day and age. And I've got, you know, I don't want to be cheesy and say my wife's my hero, but she's amazing. She does some really great stuff. You know, she keeps us all together and keeps the family solid. She's an amazing lady. My current hero, as you can see there, Sam, with my steering wheel, I'm big into cars. I'm big into racing, both physically and virtually. My current hero is Lewis Hamilton. What a sportsman, you know, unbelievable. I mean, he's number one now, right? He's just achieved so much. So the day that he won the current world championship, Martin Brundle interviewed him as literally as he came out of the car, and he was panting. Obviously, he just finished a race and he won it, right? And he won the championship to equal Schumacher's record. For those of you who watched Formula One that weekend, that particular one, Mercedes, who normally do well in qualifying, normally end up qualifying first and second and win the race first and second. This particular weekend, they ended up qualifying, I think it was sixth and ninth. So they had trouble this weekend. And he said this: we knew it was a difficult weekend. We were massively disappointed with our qualifying position. We knew that we were on the back foot and we did the best we could. And that's important what he says there. He said, we learned a lot and we did it as a team. There was no blame game. We just hashed it out. We just hashed it out. And we continue to try and improve our communication so we can make moves forwards. And we don't always get things perfect. So even though they are the best team, and he was just so, you know, he was appreciative of the team. He was appreciative that there were challenges. It's never perfect, but we came together as a team. It was just amazing.
Yeah, we've just done a workshop actually with a team, and we're talking about learning cultures. And I did a story about Formula One in there. I do think that it's really important that you also debrief on your good things, but you also debrief on your bad things and you learn from that. And the fact that he said that and didn't put blame is great. So thank you very much for that. Thank you, and I'll hand over to Sam to close us off.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. That's really interesting. So yeah, really enjoyed that. Thank you, Martin. That was fascinating, as expected. Really good stuff. I hope our listeners enjoyed the snippets from DPJ and from Stuart as well that made their way into the remote working conversation. And it just remains for me to say thanks again for listening to Get Amplified from the Amplified Group. Your comments and subscriptions always gratefully received. And we'll see you next time.